Probably it's one of the best lectures given by Shankaraman today. Such a great clarity of speech and such wonderful examples, striking examples fitting in the proper place. He got 75%. Probably this is the highest mark of this semester, I think. I don't know whether anybody has got above 75%. So, I can just tell you in which ones he scored very well. In flow he got 10 out of 10, and non-deviation from Paramsa he got 9, maintaining the interest he got 9, expression and precision he got 9. These are the highest marks. So it was very interesting to hear him, isn't it? Nice it was. I don't know, actually generally when I make marking positive and negative, generally my negative column is fully filled up with some of the points generally. But today I couldn't find much negative points from Shankaraman. Because so many wonderful things he spoke today. Gausinder Prabhu's presentation also was very interesting to learn, understand, and also to apply the grade in the proper direction. I'll speak whatever little I feel about this topic. To begin with, I would like to cite a story of Tolstoy, very famous. There was a very rich man, very wealthy man, who wanted to give something in charity to poor people. So one poor man came to him. And the poor man wanted some piece of land. And the wealthy man was so joyous that day that he told the poor man that I can give you as much land as you want. How much do you want? And the poor man started calculating in his mind, how many acres of land should I ask him? Then when he was making up his mind, the rich man told him, okay, now you see, all the land that you see up to the horizon is mine. So you run and take as much land as you want, but upon one condition, that you should return back before the sun sets in the evening, and all that land will belong to you. And this poor man was so happy. Then he began his athletic race. He thought, let me run. Now let me run and cover hundreds and thousands of acres. In fact, he thought, let me usurp the entire property of this rich man. That was his idea. And he started running. And it became about 12:30, 1 o'clock. You can imagine. If it's 1 o'clock, what does it mean? Then he has to return back. Only then he can reach before the sunset. But then he thought, while going I was a little slow. So while returning back, I will return more fastly. I will cover up the distance within half the time of my morning time running. So in this way he started running further. Then it became 2 o'clock, it became 2:30, it became 3. Still he was so greedy for the land. But still he didn't make up his mind to return. Still he was running ahead. Then it became 4 o'clock. Then he realized, now I think it's difficult for me to pick up speed to return back to the beginning point. So thinking like that, he started to return at 4 o'clock. Then when he was running back, it was almost sunset. He could cover only half the distance. And still he was running with his full vigor, foaming in the mouth. He would stumble and fall on the ground and roll on the ground and again wake up and run again and again. His heart was palpitating. And so much tears were coming from his eyes and foam was coming from the mouth. His body was sweating and he was rolling on the ground. But somehow or other, his greed was so intense that he wanted to somehow cover up the distance. So, when he ran back in this way, he never reached back the beginning point that everyone knows. Poor fellow, he died before he returned back to the point because of his intense greed. So this kind of greed, either for money or for another man's wife or for land, is actually called as asking for the impossible. So when you ask for the impossible, you dig your own pit in the graveyard. That's what you are doing. So today's topic is not whether one can become a millionaire or not. Shri Radha Kundikari Bhagavan says, if anybody thinks that the topic for today is whether we can become a millionaire or we should remain a beggar, if you think like that, you are badly mistaken. All of you assembled here, you all are quite young and you have so much vigor and energy in your body and you are ready to work very hard. The question is, we should work hard in the right direction, isn't it? Like you have seen people in the villages beating the husk. But if somebody is taking an empty husk and keeps on beating it and is saying, I am working very hard, utilizing all my energy, what is the use of such hard work? There should be some meaning. The example is often given of a donkey in front of which a carrot is dangled. So the donkey sees the carrot and he tries to catch it. Every time he takes one step ahead, the carrot also moves one step ahead. He is unable to catch it. So right from morning to afternoon he spends his time trying to catch the carrot and he reaches the riverside carrying the big burden of clothes on his back. And then in the same way, the washerman takes away the carrot and keeps it aside, and on the way back again he puts back the carrot to bring him back to home. So because of the dangling carrot, he is ready to work very hard. But at the end of the day, he may get a handful of grass because the carrot is reserved for tomorrow. So in this way, in the modern times, people are given, what is the dangling carrot? Better prospects. Better prospects. Try to catch the better prospect. He keeps on evading from you, escaping from you. You take one step ahead and it goes one step ahead. So, we can see the donkey's dream of a better prospect. In fact, this donkey once came across his neighbor, another donkey. Another donkey told him, why are you working so hard? This donkey told him, you don't know. My washerman, master, once he called his daughter and he was shouting at her. He said, if you misbehave at home like this ever in future, I will marry you to this donkey. So he said, I am hoping that someday I will get married to this daughter. This is never to happen. So this is the aspiration of this donkey. And it is not a very funny story because it very much directly applies to people of the modern times. People are working so hard. Let us analyze at different levels. What are they working so hard for? Please tell me, accumulating wealth is for accumulating wealth or accumulating wealth is for happiness? Why do you accumulate wealth? Are you not accumulating wealth for happiness? So accumulating wealth is only the means. The end is different. It is not the end in itself. Simply accumulating lot of wealth out of intense greed is not end in itself. That was the case with the man whom I told you in the beginning of this class. He was running. So he thought, accumulating this land is the goal of my life. He even, in the pursuit of achieving the land, he forgot the actual goal of his life, which is happiness. Isn't it? If you take the lifestyle of a modern man, at every level he is torturing himself in the name of working hard for happiness. Actually, man worked hard only to achieve happiness in the beginning. But in the pursuit of accumulating more wealth, he has ended up forgetting his actual goal. And even materially such a man is not happy. Today you see the families, husband is in Madras, wife is in Delhi, son is in Boston. So they are in different places, they are not even living in the same family together. They cannot even see each other in the morning or in the evening. Only satisfaction is my son is earning millions of dollars in Boston. He is a very wealthy man. And my wife also has a bank job in Delhi and I have another bank job in South India somewhere. That is the only satisfaction that you see. So there is no culture in the family of people coming together. Even at the platform of mind, if you see, are people satisfied? Not at all. Because mind is generally satisfied when it is allowed to be creative. Today, if you see, people are just sitting in front of television and constantly focusing on the television. It is said, when one simply keeps on watching the television, his eyesight of his brain never works. It remains idle. You know why? Because there is a gulf of difference between reading and watching. When you read, for example, I tell you that there is a beautiful Titanic ship that is floating in the Atlantic Ocean, and there are beautiful birds flying at the top of it, and the sun is setting. Now, all of you could picture it. So you have to utilize the right side of your brain to imagine this particular incident which I am telling you. Whereas when you see the television, it is like a pre-registered food. It gives you the picture directly, so it doesn't allow you to think. So you are cheating yourself. You think you are gaining so much knowledge by seeing television, but actually it reduces your ability to be creative. Like you see today, most of the engineering students, even after passing out, don't know how to see the logarithm table. You know that? So they have a calculator. Even when you ask 2 plus 2, how much? 1 minute, then take my calculator. Even for 2 plus 2, they need a calculator. Because it reduces the creativity. So, in the body or in the mind, we have only become less advanced, not that we are advancing more. So, at every level, you can see the lifestyle of a man is becoming more and more narrow. I was in Bombay last year. I could see when we want to go to Nirara from Dadar. One man asked me, "You really mean you want to go now?" He asked me, "Yes, why not?" He said, "You know, these are the peak hours. You don't know how are the peak hours at this time?" So we both were standing, myself and one more devotee. And the train came, my Lord, with such a huge crowd. At least about a dozen people are outside the train, hanging from the train. Some of them were not even in the door. There is a side, there is a window kind of thing in which they were holding on to. You don't know what is the condition of those people. They may any time be hit by a post and they may die. People are traveling like that in the train, completely crowded, jam-packed, crushing the bones of people. We waited for at least 4 trains. We missed all of them. You just can't imagine getting into it. Once you get into it, you can't get out of it. It's like that. That is the kind of life people are living. And Bombay has become such an advanced city that they have increased the number of trains year after year, that every 2 minutes you get one train. But despite that, the population of Bombay is increasing because of so many greedy people coming to Bombay to make more and more money, that even after increasing so much trains, they are not able to give the facility to the people. Now only you have to have some trains flying in the sky. Otherwise you cannot actually satisfy all the people. Because the number of people, population is increasing in Bombay. And it is going to increase in the future also. So the condition of people living in the cities, as you see, it is so horrible. And these people leave early morning. They leave like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. Some of them actually go from Pune to Bombay and come back in the night. You know that? There are people doing like that. So man is working so hard for accumulating so that ultimately he can become happy. But when is that ultimate time going to come? Tell me. How long is he working? The ultimate time will come when he is going to die. When he has to leave away all the wealth he earned. Jai Shri Radha Vidyadhari Bhagavan Ki, Upai Vakchandra Bhagavan Ki, Shri Radha Bhagavan Ki. Even if you see materially, man is not at all happy. Even material happiness. People, those days are gone when husband, wife, children, they come together and sit together and they eat together and they discuss about family, discuss about God, discuss about some Ramayana, Mahabharata, or even about family. To discuss even about one's family, there is no time for man, modern man, if you see. So we are working so hard, people are accumulating wealth, their pockets are increasing, their money in the bank balance is increasing, but the man is not at all happy. So, what is the actual standard of happiness when we talk of happiness? Actually, happiness is the goal. And the happiness also has to be ultimate, that which can never be taken away from us. then it is meaningful for working for such a happiness. You tell me to work hard, I will certainly work. Provided you can convince me that the happiness I get out of such a work can never be taken away from me. Then it is meaningful to work for such a cause. That is why Narada Muni said, Tasyaiva Heto Prayateta Kovito Nalabhyate Yad Brahmata Upariyata. Either it is really worthy to work for such a cause which brings forth the ultimate happiness to you. This can never be taken away from you. This is actually the conclusion of all the learned circles. The great sages and saints have come to this conclusion that working hard is meaningful provided what is offered to you will never be taken away. But you can see, as we gave the example of the honey, the foolish honeybee goes from one flower to another flower and keeps on accumulating so much honey in his honeycomb, practically for years. And at one fine morning, the farmer comes and drives him away and takes away all the honey and goes away. In the same way, people may earn millions of dollars going to America and returning back and in the name of pleasing their parents. There are so many people having a lot of money. But where all the money goes, ultimately? Either people spend money because of deadly diseases they get living in the polluted environment of the city, or when they die, they leave the money aside and go away. That's all. The money is taken away by the powerful separating sword of time. And you just can't do anything with it. You cannot drive the graveyard to spare your life. Can you? You can't. Or you cannot take your machine gun and shoot at death. When the death comes, it makes no discrimination whether you are rich or poor, whoever you be. Indiscriminately, it takes away the life of everyone. So, a person who is intelligent can see with the eyes of knowledge that all that people are working hard is ultimately a vain attempt for mere accumulation of wealth which remains in this world. And none of it is enjoyed by the person. Actually, it is said when you enter into the circle of people who are working very hard for earning money, over a period of time, you also learn ways to earn money not only by fair means, but also by foul means. You learn that. So that money earned by foul means gives you a lot of misery in the heart while being in this life. And also it gives a lot of anxiety that I cheated that person, tomorrow he may do something to me. You have a fear while living. And then that accumulated money at the time of death, it sends you to hell. It is said. It assures that you go to hell because you earn money by foul means. Should we earn money like that? Is it really necessary to work so hard and earn lots and lots of money and not just enjoy it? In fact, people just dream that one day I will enjoy this all this money. That's all. But they never enjoy. Once upon a time, a great sage was sitting under a tree and he was chanting very happily, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. He was living in a natural atmosphere. There were hundreds of different colorful birds chirping in the trees, and the trees were filled up with fruits. There was a river passing by. He was sitting happily there and chanting. And a king happened to pass by. He went to the sage and asked him, what are you doing here, sitting in the forest? Why didn't you come out and work very hard? Why are you wasting your life? And the sage didn't even want to speak to him. And he asked, why should I? He asked him. And the king said, no, if you work very hard, then you can actually have a big kingdom like I have. Then, what next? He asked. Then he said, after you have a kingdom, then you can have wife, you can have children, you can have subordinates, you can have ministers, and you can enjoy so many things. Okay, with all that, what can I do? Then after that, you will see that you become a very great man, your children are grown up now, and then you can give them responsibility, and then you can go back to forest and you can retire and lead a happy life, he said. And say that I am already doing that. I am already happy. So, people who are working hard for accumulating wealth, they say they are going to be happy one day, but that one day never comes. Because they are never going to think about that day throughout their life. Because the intense craving for accumulating wealth never is satiated. Until the death forces you to leave everything aside and bow down in front of it. Till that point, one does not leave this craving. This is how one keeps on working hard like that. So, one has to understand what is the real standard of happiness. Actually, the question is not whether one can become a millionaire or one cannot. If you see, by the will of Providence, some people are born rich. Like for example, Tata or Birla in India, they were born with a silver spoon. And the average worker in a company, no matter how much he works hard, he's never going to become a Tata or Birla. You can see that the workers working late, how much ever they work hard, throughout their life they remain so. Even the rickshawala sometimes, you see, by arrangement, they may get money in battery. You've seen that? Like one rickshawala, he got 10 lakhs by lottery. But what did he do? Again, within a year, he again came back to the same point of being an ordinary rickshawala. Because all the money he spent in, he squandered in running after women, in smoking, in drinking liquor, and playing gambling. He withered away all that money. Like that. So you will see that in the nature around you, no matter how much a person works hard, everyone has something called as destiny, which works certainly. And it works in everyone's life. And those who are accumulated, they are leaving the money and going away to death. And those who are born rich, they are also leaving the money and going. So there is one thing that is common for everyone. What is it? Death. If one, everyone is equal in the world when it comes to the question of death. Only there is equality there. You can say that. So when that is the case, then one should ask this question. What can bring me happiness that can never be taken away from me? I was talking about the happiness of the body, or the happiness of the mind, happiness of the intellect. These are all short-lived, flickering, material happiness. All these things. Eating a rasagulla or a gulab jamun may satisfy you. But how long? As long as it remains in the tongue. When the gulab jamun goes here, happiness is gone. From here, when it is touching this small portion, which is 3-4 inches long, it appears here. When it is rolling on that, it gives you happiness. When it goes to the throat, it is gone. Immediately. Calculate the time, how much time it gives you happiness? A few moments, isn't it? Or mental happiness, how much you get? Like when you write a poem, you feel very nice when you write a poem. Or hear some nice, sweet music. Cinema songs, how many months do you hear? Tell me. Some song that you love the most, that you cherish the most, you carry that Walkman with you, wherever you go, you hear it over and over again 100 times and then you get bored of it. And you leave it and go for a new song. Isn't it? It may last for a few months. And intellectual happiness, when you solve a mathematical problem, a derivation, or you make an intelligent move in a chess game, isn't it? Or when you hit a target with your gun or with your bow and arrow, using your intellect. So one feels a very great satisfaction, which may last even much longer. You'll keep on telling people, that day I made a move in the chess game. You just can't imagine it. Probably one day I will be a world champion. You know, you think like that, it gives you some happiness. But then, gradually, over a period of time, you see that your interests change. It may last for maybe 10 years. Now, many of you might have played chess before. Now, you have become interested in something else. And the happiness that comes in the platform of ego even lasts probably throughout your life. Like once, if you get some special credential, right, like if some college gives you a very special credit that you are state champion in cricket or something like that, or you are number one university rank in your college, and then the happiness you get wherever you go, you tell people, I did this. You want people to know about you, isn't it? So that is the platform of ego where you get some satisfaction. But even all these happinesses are finished at the time of death. When you die, what will you do with your degree? Tell me, where does your degree go? No? That remains probably in the cupboard, isn't it? When you are born, somebody has answered, I think, what is it? Where does the degree go? You think it's burned with the body?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, they will see and laugh. Intelligent boy. Isn't it? So, they are gone after their death. And then we don't know where you are born. You may not be born in Maharashtra, you may be born somewhere in Kashmir or in South India, and you may be studying in a, you know, kindergarten school saying, ba, ba, black sheep, you know. Yeah, your degree, all engineering degree is finished at the time of death. So why should we work for all these kinds of happinesses? So let us work for everlasting happiness. So education is required to know what is the happiness that can never be taken away from me. What is the everlasting happiness? Because the goal of working hard or the goal of accumulating wealth is ultimately happiness. Why people want money? Tell me this first. Why are people working for money? Because money is a mode of exchanging happiness. Because with money, you purchase happiness, right? Like with money, you can get ice cream. With money, you can go for a world tour. With money, you can attract beautiful women. Maybe if you want to marry someone, people will think this man is having a big status in society, then they give you a girl for marriage. Or with money, you may be considered very powerful by people, even if you look ugly and puny. But if you have money, people will respect you for your money. So people want money because they think they can purchase happiness. But people do not know that even after having money, there are many people who are not able to enjoy. Like you were asking the question that how do you know that millionaires are not happy? See, when you go past the house of a very great millionaire, you see that, oh, this fellow has so many cars and he has such a beautiful big bungalow. He must be enjoying inside. You think like that. But you go upstairs and see, poor fellow, either he must be coughing because of tuberculosis or he is having diabetes because of which he cannot even eat one piece of sweet, although he has so much money. Our doctor must have told him, you cannot even touch salt for so many years. Even although he has all the money in his hand. There are people like that. We imagine that he has to be happy because he has so much money. Because it is a grand illusion to think that if you have money, you can be happy. But there are varieties of complications in this world which will not let you be happy even if you have everything of the world. That is the nature of this material world. So, people think of accumulating wealth only because they want happiness. And I told you just now, happiness is on the bodily platform, on the mental platform, intellectual platform, egoistic platform, none of them are permanent. They all are finished. And what is the real happiness? Samante yogino anante. Satya ananda chidatmani. It is a satya ananda, the actual truthful happiness. That is spiritual happiness, the happiness of the soul. The scriptures tell us that the happiness of the soul is inbuilt in the soul. All he has to do is to revive it. When I say inbuilt, it is already there, then why are we not able to perceive? That means you are doing something wrong against the constitution of the soul. That is why you are suffering. If you were acting according to the nature of the soul, you wouldn't be suffering. I used to often give a simple example. Like if there is a sick, he has employed a worker, he has given him food, he has given him the outhouse to live, he has given him uniform, everything. Very simple to know what is the duty of that servant living in the outhouse. What is his duty? To serve the sick, to serve the master. Is there any tinge of doubt in that? But if he doesn't serve, he wakes up in the morning with a whistle and he combs himself, dresses himself smartly and he goes out to do something else. But he wants to eat food and wear a uniform and earn money from the state. Is it possible? That's what everyone wants to do in this world. God has given you everything. He has given you food to eat. He has given you clothing. He has given you so much abundant place to live. He has given you grains and fruits and light and rains. And what has he not given you? He has given everything. But people want to reject God and do everything else other than surrendering to God. They are determined to work very hard, but in the wrong direction. It's like saying, why are you condemning hard work? Like if somebody says, your destination is Bombay now, and you are going very fastly towards Sholapur, and I am stopping and telling, my dear friend, please kindly wait for a moment. Don't work so hard. Why are you working so hard? And you say, what is this? You want me to be a lazy man? You don't want me to have ambitions? You want me to be a lazy bum? And you are going very fastly running towards Sholapur. What should I do? Isn't it? You need a change of direction. You are going so fast in the wrong direction. In fact, the more you are faster, the more you will see the wrong destination fastly, isn't it? So you have to all the more stop very fastly. That is why all the spiritualists, their teaching is always like this. That don't run to a wrong destination so fastly. At least little bit become slow first and put a brake and turn yourself about turn and then go in the opposite direction properly. So working hard is not condemned. Working hard for the wrong purpose is condemned. Even after accumulating so much wealth, people are not even materially happy, what to speak of the ultimate spiritual happiness? That can come only when one understands the Atma Tattva, one understands about the soul. So, the natural constitution of the soul is to understand who is God and to love Him. The Supreme Lord is called as Rasa Vigraha. Rasa Vigraha means one who is a reservoir of all transcendental happiness. God is always happy. He is never satisfied. In this world, it is very difficult to find someone who is always smiling. Have you seen? Sometimes you see the photo of a person. It looks as if he has been booked in the nearby police station an hour ago. It looks like that. Isn't it? People look so, you feel very sorry to see them. Because they are not happy. They are not happy within, they are not happy without. And even those who claim to be happy, they are only happy for some time. Very soon their happiness is stolen away by the element of material nature. Some lamentation will come in their life, some problem will come. Very soon that happiness is taken away. One cannot be happy. But it is that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is always happy. He is always smiling. He is never unsatisfied. Because he is Rasa Vigraha. Rasa Vigraha means one who is a reservoir of all pleasure. And who can be happy? One who connects himself to this Rasa Vigraha. He can always be happy. It's possible. Just like I want illumination here in my house, all I need to do is to just connect myself to the local electricity board. Isn't it? I just connect myself there and I will get illumination here. In the same way, you want to get happiness, just get connected to God. And you will immediately be happy. With nothing. Not even with something. You can be happy with nothing. This is the beauty. In fact, our scriptures say, even if one does not even endeavor for accumulating wealth for his own sustenance, but he is a devotee of God, he can be the happiest man in the world. You may be surprised. How, without roti, kapda, makan, a man can be happy? Is it possible? The Vedic lifestyle, if you see, the standard of happiness and the standard of service is very lofty, if you see. Nobody works hard to accumulate. Let us take the example of a Brahmana. If you see a Brahmana, he doesn't work hard to accumulate money. If a Brahmana accumulates money, he deserves to be punished, according to the Vedas. So he only accepts whatever is required for that day. That is why when Vamandev was offered land by Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj told him, you ask as much as you want. I can even offer you islands. Brahmana said, no. Brahmana does not take more than his minimum requirement. Not maximum, minimum. Minimum requirement. Maximum means you may want the entire world. So he takes only his minimum requirement, whatever is just needed for him. And he is satisfied with that. And as soon as he begins accumulating, he becomes polluted and corrupt. So this is the standard of a Brahmana. That is why he is happy. Similarly, Kshatriya, do you think he is taking money for his enjoyment? He accepts the tax from the people, not for his enjoyment, but for giving it back to them in the form of facilities, like building temples, keeping best sanitation for the people, and planting trees on either side of the roads, and creating atmosphere in the country in such a way that people will come together for performing God consciousness. This is the duty of a Kshatriya in those days. So Kshatriya never was living to exploit and enjoy the people's public property. So he was always happy because he was God conscious. Such a Kshatriya is called as Raja Rishi. Called as Raja Rishi. Sage amongst kings. So they lived like that. And a Shudra, he never collected money. He was only given. Shudra means not according to one's birth. Again, it is according to one's quality and activity. Shudra means one who likes to do a lot of hard work but never wants to use his brain. So he is a Shudra. So such a person, he works very hard for the higher classes and he gets his clothes, he gets his food, he gets his shelter and he is extremely happy. So a Shudra is also doing service for the higher classes. Now, one of the boys was asking about the Bill Gates offering money to people and non-envious and having such a quality like a sage. But in the ancient times, people rendered real service. Do you know what is real service? Real service is considered a duty and it is not even considered a sacrifice. You know that? You don't even feel when you perform your real duty, I mean, when you perform your dharma, you don't even feel I am doing some sacrifice. Like you can see, when a Kshatriya is passing by in his horse, and a woman is being raped by somebody, and the woman shouts for help, and Chaturya gets down from the horse and he goes and helps the woman. If the woman is thanking him, falling at his feet or wanting to offer some money or charity to him, he will not accept. Because he will say, it was my duty. I just performed my duty. So, in the Vedic times, performance of one's duty itself was considered the reward. Reward is not considered separate remuneration. Understand that. So this service, it transcends a paycheck. That's the beauty of this service. It is not done according to the amount of money that you have given in a company. This is the standard of service. So this service is rendered out of love, not out of passion, not out of envy for accumulating wealth, not out of exploiting and enjoying others. It is simply rendered out of love. And that love can be one common uniting factor in society when Krishna is the center of society. As I said, Krishna is the rasa vigraha. And when the entire society, according to their propensity to do work, they are fitting in Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra according to their respective classes, and they all work together focusing on God, Hari Toshanam, Sansiddhir Hari Toshanam, it is said, for his satisfaction, then that can be real happiness. So you understand the difference? What is the actual meaning of service? If you ask people today, they say, I am doing service. Are you studying or what are you doing? I am doing service. Is it service? Think twice. Or are you doing service? It's not service at all. It's not service at all. Any action that is done with expectation of remuneration is not service at all. Because service is something that is performed out of love. And such a service can be performed only if God is the center of your life. So it doesn't mean if God has to be the center of your life, you leave everything in order to become a God-conscious human being. The Kshatriya king, they never give up their duty. Similarly, Vaishyas. More money from him. Eating both people's money, he will keep on pulling the case. He will see a lot. So, in the Vedic times, justice or medicine or education, there was no money involved in that. That is why Guru Dakshina, when they were giving, it was optional, and one could give anything in charity to a spiritual master. It was not, you don't have to say 40,000 rupees per year. You don't have to pay like that. Nothing like that. Today, everything is money centered. It is not service or it is not love, and God is not the center. So society has practically become godless. So people cannot be happy. So you want to keep that rasa vigraha aside, the Supreme Lord, and you want to get rasa. How is it possible? You want a godless society, but you want a Ramarajya. You want a Ramarajya without Ram. Take Ram aside, kick him out, and you have only Rajya. The Rajya of dogs and cats. That's all you will have. It's not possible. Because Lord is a reservoir of all happiness. And as I said, devotees who get connected to God, they can be happy with anything. In this connection, I would like to read a very interesting jewel, like shloka from Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, Santushtasya nirihasya swatma ramasya yatsukham kutastat kama lobhena lavator dehaya vishara. One who is content, satisfied, and links his activities with Paramatma, the Super Soul, withering in the heart of every living being, enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavoring even for his livelihood. Where is such happiness for a materialistic man who is impelled by lust and greed, and who therefore wanders in all directions with the desire to accumulate wealth? You heard it? Such an interesting. I'll read the translation again. One who is content, satisfied, santushtasya means satisfied, and links his activities to the Super Soul seated in the heart of every living being, enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavoring for his livelihood. Where is such happiness for a materialistic man who is impelled by lust and greed, and who therefore wanders in all directions with the desire to accumulate wealth? So this is a very wonderful verse. The subsequent verses, it says that one who is wearing the proper shoe, especially if he is walking in the pathway of a forest, which is filled with so many thorns and pebbles and sharp stones, if he is wearing the shoe, will he be hurt by the stones and pebbles? Definitely not. In the same way, it says, one who is wearing the shoe of self-satisfaction and contentment, even if he is put into varieties of difficulties in this material world, he will never suffer even a bit if he is wearing this shoe of self-satisfaction. If he is always self-satisfied. Verse says, sada santushta manasaha. That means, always satisfied in the mind. Sada santushta manasaha. Sarva shivamaya adishaha. Shivamaya means auspicious. Sarva, everywhere, shivamaya, auspicious. Dishaha, in all directions, wherever he turns around, he sees only auspiciousness. Such a person. Sada santushta manasaha. Then he says, shakara kantakadibhyo yatopanat parashivam. How such a person is able to be happy? Because he is wearing this shoe of self-satisfaction. So he can walk across the path of his life, no matter how much it is infested with thorns and pebbles and sharp stones and things like that. He will never be hurt because he is wearing the shoe of self-satisfaction. So, nobody can ever dream of the self-satisfaction without becoming connected to God. God is called as Atmaram. He is called as Atmaram. He is always self-satisfied. And if you become connected to God, then you also can become Atmaram. Atmaram ashtamunayo nirgranta apyurukkame kurvantahaitukumbhaktyam ittam bhutagunohari. It is said, even if one becomes self-satisfied, still Atmaram ashtamunayo, it is said. So the great sages, nirgranta, they have completely severed all the knots of material attachment to this world. Apyurukkame kurvantahaitukumbhaktyam. They perform undivided devotional service towards God. So, all of you are living as a part of the world, so you have to find out a way and means by which you can perform true religion, which will allow you to live happily while being in this world and will assure you eternal everlasting bliss after death. Then that is actually your standard of life. How to do that is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in two wonderful shlokas. Like one boy asked a brilliant question towards the end of the question answer session about how you are giving an allurement to us, come to Krishna, you will become wealthy. See what the Bhagavatam says. It says, dharmasya hi apavargasya. It says, dharmasya, dharma means religion. Religion should be performed only for achieving the ultimate end, which is pure love for God. Dharmasya hi apavargasya. Nartor tayopakalpate. And one should not perform religion for the sake of making money. That should not be the purpose of religion. That means you should not come to temple to God saying that, my God, please make me more wealthy. Let me become a millionaire. So you don't have to give direction to God what you should be in your life. He knows what is good for you. You are a child and God is like a mature father. And a child is telling father, my dear father, give me that mithai which is always surrounded by, flies. So, you are a fool. God knows what is best for you. So, one need not give direction to God. Dharmasya hi apavargasya nartotaya pagalpate nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labaya hismata. And even if one is somehow or other wealthy, you have become wealthy, let us assume. You have become millionaire now, let us assume. Somehow or other. If you have wealth, then it says, nātasya dharma kāntasya. That means that wealth also should be used only for the purpose of propagating dharma and not for kāma labhāya kismata. One should not use it for kāma. That means satisfying one's sense gratificatory desires, indriyatṛpti. So what are the two things I told in this shloka? Please tell me, who can say? First point, dharmasya. So if you are performing religion, you should perform it for what purpose? Service to God and to achieve love for God, which will get us eternal bliss. Eternally we will be with God. One should work, use dharma only for that purpose and not for demanding money from God. Dharmasya apavargasya nartho sthayopakalpate. And what is the second point is that? Somehow or other, if you are a millionaire, You have got a lot of money with you. What should you do with that? Yeah, it should be used for propagating the dharma. It should be used for that purpose. And should not be? Yes, should not be used for some gratification. See, in these two lines, how meaningful things are given. And then in the next shloka it says, kamasya nendriya prete labho jive tayagata jivasya tatva jignyasa nato yascheha karmadhi. It says, kamasya na indriya prete. One should not direct one's desires for indriya priti. What is indriya priti? Sense gratification, indriya priti. So don't direct your desires in that wrong direction. I was telling you about going to Shalapur, you remember? Instead of going to Bombay, where are you going? Shalapur. So you have to turn your direction. So he says, kamasya na indriya priti. You are going in the wrong direction, so it says na indriya priti. Don't use your desires for indriya priti. Labhu jiveta yavata. Earn the labha. Make profit in your business or whatever, in your work. How much? Labhu jiveta yavata. Whatever is required for your sustenance. Earn only that much. That means roti kapda makan. Only that is required for your sustenance. You need daily bread, you need a house to live, and you need some clothing to wear. And then it is food, yeah, food, clothing, shelter. Very simple. If you have these three things with you, and if you are God conscious, you can be happy even with little money. So labho jiveta yavata. Shariram kevalam karma, kuruvan napnoti kalvisham, Krishna says. In Bhagavad Gita also. Shariram kevalam karma. So, labho jiveta yavata. And then he says, jivasya tatva jignyasa. Your life is meant for what? Huh? All of you know this word, tatva jignyasa? Yes? Spiritual knowledge. Tatva jignyasa means spiritual inquiry. Tatva is the real truth, the atma, not this body. Body is asat, and atma is tat. So, jivasya tattva jignyasa. You should focus on understanding this tattva, atma tattva. Nartho yascheha karma bihi. One should not do karma for artha, it says. So, in Kali Yuga, people are doing karma for what? Artha. They are doing the opposite. Exactly the opposite. Whatever Shastra says, they very faithfully do the opposite. Whatever it says, like it said, kamasena indriya prete. Indriya prete is bad. Don't go for that. They are doing, we will go for sense gratification. Running after sense gratification. And then says, labhu jiveta yavata, earn money that is required only for sustenance. And what are they doing? They want to earn only in dollars. They don't want in rupees, currency note. They want to earn only in dollars or pounds. And then says, jivasya tatva jinyasa, use your life only for tatva jinyasa. And they are using life only for pampering the body. For the body, what kind of cosmetics I can put, what kind of hair ties I can put, how I can dress smartly. How many types of shoes are available in the market? Tell me. Sports shoes. Dozens of them, right? Maybe dozen will be less. So many dozens of types of shoes are available. So many dozens of types of jeans. And they have different ways of attracting people with advertisements. So simply it is a cage polishing culture. Simply polishing the cage and ignoring the parrot inside. Allowing the parrot to die. It's called as Atmaha, killer of the soul. So modern civilization is teaching people how to kill the soul. Of course, soul can never be killed. Because Atma is Achana. Killing the soul means not giving the soul what will really bring him ultimate happiness. This is the most unfortunate thing. Why we feel so sorry for them? Because they are using this most valuable human body for a wrong purpose. Like, will you not feel sorry if somebody takes a Mercedes Benz and uses it for plugging the fuse? Will you feel sorry or not? A fool. Like we said, one man, earlier, he used to go in a, he had only a cycle in his life. For about 40 years, he used to go in a cycle. And somehow or other, at one point of time, he became so friendly to a very rich man who donated him a car. And then he got a very beautiful car. And then he took the car and he was going on the road. Everyone was laughing at him going on the road. Do you know why? Because he was going in the car exactly at the speed of his cycle. Because he had never experienced going faster than that. Actually the car is meant for going much faster than the cycle, isn't it? Similarly, if you take animal body and the human body, is there not difference? What is the difference? animals simply work for their sense gratification. They don't know anything beyond that. But human beings can do sense control. And we can use our energy for the right purpose, for going back to God. So, the human body, I was telling, is compared to the car, which can fly much smartly on a smooth road. Neither is it meant for going so slow like the animal, nor is it meant for being used for a wrong purpose like in a plowing field. In the same way, modern man is doing exactly the opposite of what the Shastras are saying. That is why he is suffering. No matter how much you develop industries, how much you make big roads and flyovers, and how much you develop communication systems and transportation systems, you are never going to be happy because you have lost the soul. Without the knowledge of the soul, there is no question of happiness. So, we all are caught up in such a civilization now. How are we going to survive? So, everyone is going in the wrong direction, so we are also going. So, what should we do? So, we should put a break and think for a while. As Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, all of you are living in a particular situation and it is not possible for us to completely take to God consciousness in a wholehearted way. But one can certainly plan out his life in such a way that one is able to become God conscious, besides living in the midst of the world. Like Krishna says, Padma Patra Nivambata, live like a lotus flower in this world. Although this world is like a dirty, muddy pool of water, still you can live like a lotus. But if you have to be lotus, do you know that the lotus is connected through its stem to the ground, from where it is able to derive the strength? In the same way, we have to derive the strength to live purely in this world from the association of devotees. So if you come regularly to temple, you will hear about God, you will know more, and the fever of greed will reduce in your heart. Otherwise, this fever of greed is only increasing more and more. And people like to have this fever. Some people say, what is this? It appears that by hearing all this, I will lose my ambition. I want to be ambitious in my life. So let me be greedy and earn a lot of money and then let me come into an association of devotees. Some people say, like one time a mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, both of them had fever. And doctor said, your daughter-in-law, she has got 103 degrees Fahrenheit. And you have got 101. And mother-in-law became so angry. She said, doctor, how dare you say I have only 101 and she has 103? Somehow give me a medicine so that I will cause 103 and become 105, she said. So she wanted to have higher temperature because she didn't know going beyond 103 means a threat to life, isn't it? If you go beyond 103, 104, it can be a threat to life. In the same way, people think in the name of being ambitious, they want to create a hell. It's like a moth entering into a blazing fire and is demanding, why are you not allowing me to enter into the fire? We are preventing you so that you don't fry yourself and burn or get roasted there. Be intelligent. Don't waste your human form of life. So work in your life in such a way that labho jiveta yavata. Earn for your sustenance. Take up a job that will fetch you your needs. Certainly the needs should not be based on greed. The need should be intelligently understood based on what the Shastras are saying. Actually, when one becomes God-conscious, one derives such internal happiness which is completely nourishing and satisfying that one need not artificially create more and more external facilities in the name of increasing happiness. It is actually a kind of insecurity. People are not feeling happiness inside, so they are trying to increase facilities, imagining that they are more happy. Simply creating new things is not going to make you happy. Happiness is actually something that is within you. It is not derived by the objects that are outside of you. If you think it is outside of you, then it is like a fish which is given all facilities to enjoy. He can never enjoy. You give him mobile, you give him internet, you give him best of the cars, you give him a lot of currency notes and magazines, he'll never be happy. So all facilities outside of you are never going to bring you happiness unless you understand this secret, which is to become connected to that Rasa Vigraha. Raso Vai Saha, it is said in the Vedanta Sutra. That Supreme Lord is the abode of transcendental happiness. How wonderful is Krishna consciousness? Because the Supreme Lord is not a dreary void, or he is not an impersonal light in the sky, whereas he is such a wonderful personality that he is sentient and full of emotions and is reciprocating love with every one of his devotees. Just see here How the Lord is surrounded by all His Gopa friends, sharing prasadam with everyone. This is spiritual world. Or you see the Lord dancing with all the gopis. Or you see the Lord who is caressed by Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. So these are not only the prerogative of special souls in the spiritual sky, every one of us already have a proper relationship with the Supreme God. So we are not newly striking a relationship with Him, but we already have a relationship. We have to just revive it. And that is actually the real spiritual society where there is true love and genuine friendship. Leaving that aside, in this world we are saying, I am doing service. What service is that? We think we do service in this world, this service has no love in it. It is only service based on money. Once the money is taken away, there is no service. Immediately you drop service also. So, don't feel offended when I say you are not doing service. You can be doing service if you come to temple regularly. Isn't it? Because if you come every weekend and do some service, that is real service. It is accepted as service. But all the other so-called service that we are entering in the world is I scratch your back and you scratch my back. That's what, isn't it? I will do this for you and you do that for me. That is not love at all, it is lust. It is simply lust for one's own enjoyment. So it's selfishness. It is not selflessness. But God consciousness is full of selflessness. Actually, selflessness only can bring forth happiness to you. Even on a material plane, if you are a little selfless to somebody, you feel so much happiness. Like if a blind man, you cross him, help him cross the road, you know, without expecting any remuneration, you feel so happy in your heart. It's a material service. Or if you see somebody poor, you give little food to them. You feel so happy. So if material selflessness can bring forth happiness on a spiritual platform, selflessness, which is the innate original nature of the soul, you love and serve God, how much happiness you will get. So one has to experience it. One has to take to Krishna consciousness. Chant Hare Krishna mantra regularly. Come in the assembly of devotees. Read the literatures like Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Understand the deep way of life that is taught in the scripture. Life actually means there has to be a Sanskriti. Culture should be there. India is actually a land of culture. In India, people gather together like this. All of you are assembled today in the temples. You can see, when Kumbh Mela is there, 20-30 lakh people come together. Do you know that? To take a dip in the Triveni Sangam. People come together like that. And in all the temples you can see, people coming together, glorifying God is naturally there in every human being. And it is more prominently present in the life of every Indian. Because it is in your blood. It's coming in the family. So, people, I remember even in my school days, we used to although we used to go to school in the daytime, evening we used to come and then go to the temple. There used to be a day called a Pushpabhishek day. We used to take a lot of flowers, everyone, and go and offer to God. And then the entire room will be filled with flowers there. And there used to be times when they used to celebrate a festival when Radha and Krishna deities would be kept in a boat and they would take the Lord around the pond, you know. And people would be throwing flowers and they'd be clapping hands and singing kirtans like that. And so many instruments would be played, different types of instruments, and the brahmanas would be chanting the Vedic mantras. There would be band that's being played, and people will be showering the flowers in the Lord. Actually, to have such a culture is very natural for every living being. If you carefully observe, the Vedas are so wonderfully prescribing a method which will also bring us happiness. At the same time, it is also glorification of God, like offering flowers to God. And then participating in such a wonderful function where the Lord is taken in procession in a pond. So the entire pond will be surrounded by thousands of people who are watching the beautiful sight of Lord being taken in a pond like that. And another time the Lord would come out of the temple in a big horse or in a rat and then go around the temple and go in the marketplaces like that. And people used to spend their evenings offering so many things to God. Actually, when these things are done gradually, by you can see wherever people are spiritual minded. This is actually the estimation of the businessmen in companies who have conducted a survey. They say anybody who takes to spiritual life seriously, nobody knows why these people are very benevolent, very loving, very selfless, very caring, and have concern for everyone around them. So businessmen don't know how these people get this quality, but they are speaking in the business field that we also should become spiritual to get these wonderful qualities so that you can make more money. So they are also talking about that. So we can see that Vedic lifestyle is described in such a way that you are materially also, you are happy. We used to be very happy. At least myself as a small boy. I didn't know what was going on, but just going with the parents to such a wonderful festival, participating in the temple, hearing such a wonderful spiritual sound vibration there in the temple, and participating in all that, really it was so enlightening for anybody. Materially it's satisfying. And if you have the understanding and you do it with understanding, what to say about that? This is culture. So real lifestyle means there has to be culture, there has to be devotion, there has to be spiritual education. Then your life is a complete life. Otherwise, if you have accumulated lot of wealth in your life and you say that now I have 5 bungalows in Bombay and I am now dying, I am in my deathbed. So what kind of life is that? It is not a complete life, it is an incomplete life. And then you don't know where are you going. To have a complete life, want you to have the spiritual education and devotion to God, which actually is nourished more and more by the association of devotees, and a rich spiritual culture. Culture actually means all people who are like-minded coming together. Like all of you here, you have been coming in the semester together to understand more about God, and you discuss with other people, and you can see your own fellow mates in the schools and colleges. You can see how wonderful they are, isn't it? Boys of the same college, they have such wonderful qualities, you never even knew that. But when they become devotees, you can see that these things are already there in the soul. The qualities of the soul start coming out. When you become more and more serious in spiritual life, the qualities of the soul start coming out. And all your material qualities, they gradually go away. One can see that. All the bad qualities like lust and pride and envy, you cannot see in a devotee. Devotee lusty and devotee filled with pride. Even neophyte devotees are so humble in Krishna consciousness. So this is actually the purpose of life. This is the meaning of life. Even if one wants to be materially happy, can he be more happy in any other place than being Krishna conscious? Even materially to speak of happiness. So when you become a proper follower of God, gradually you learn more and more. You understand how Krishna consciousness is best in every respect. So you perform your prescribed duty. Ananitya nimittena swadharmena amalatmana. It is said, once you have amalatmana, a pure heart, free from contamination. Free from contamination means the propensity to enjoy separate from God. Don't have that propensity. Have a pure heart and do your prescribed duty of being a student or being your man working in a company. But then it says, ananitya nimittena, offer your fruits to God. So you take some money for your own sustenance, which is required for yourself and your parents. But you should set aside some money for God, which certainly is an additional thrill that you have for enjoyment. Don't enjoy it, rather you spend it for God. Every one of you, when you take up a job, you certainly have 2,000-3,000 rupees extra apart from your necessities in life. If you keep it with you, naturally you will spend it for extra enjoyment. You will spend it in some wrong direction. So it is said, ananitya nimittena, give it off to God. Sadharmena amalatmana. Tivrayani bhaktyacha shutasam pratyacharam. Shutam means to hear. Hear about the glories of God regularly like this. Actually it is said, different things can be curbed by different ways. Like if you want to give up lust, one has to apply one's determination to give up lust. In the same way, if one wants to give up greed, it is that one should discuss the disadvantages of accumulating wealth. Then one can give up the greed. So, the purpose of discussing about the disadvantages of a materialistic way of life is to reduce the fever. Is it good or not to reduce the fever? You want to have more fever like that mother-in-law, or you want to have lesser fever? Lesser fever, that means you understood. So let us reduce this fever for materialistic way of life. Let us give up this bodily consciousness and become situated in the soul as a pure servant of God. So, as a man working in a company or as a student, spend at least once in a week in the temple. And even after you take up a job, make your life simple in such a way that you have time for God. It is possible in our moment, like just this evening, there is one Jaya Narasingha Prabhu and Yashodharani Mataji. I was talking to them this evening. They both, husband and wife, they both are his dedicated devotees. They went to SOS, Save Our Souls, Baragram. There is a children orphanage for children. 200 children there are hearing a similar class like this from them today. Do you know that? One of our temple devotees also went to give a class there, and they are doing kirtans, and they are going and serving 200 children. Can you imagine? Husband and wife, both of them, they, of course, they are married, they have their family, they are living very close to temple, but then they understood the value of Krishna consciousness. So they are going out in the evenings, they are coming and helping the temple, coming in the mornings and attending classes. So one should have a spiritual way of life. Then one can truly become happy. They are the happiest people. If you ask them, you can meet them sometimes. They are the happiest people in the world. Because they have the happiness which many rich men don't have. Many people who have ranked the highest in the world in richness, such people don't have happiness. But a devotee, wherever he is, whether he is a brahmachari, whether he is a grihastha, whether he is a student, whether he is an old man, whether he is a small child, everyone can be happy. Where there is Brahminical culture, people can be happy. Brahminical culture means Krishna is the center, cows are worshipped. You see, we have a beautiful goshala here. We have 3 cows and 2 calves, and they are wonderfully nourished here. Where the cows are protected, where the spiritual knowledge is propagated about God, where there are faithful devotees of God living together and practicing God consciousness and preaching to people, this is Brahminical culture. So that is the happiest place. Just get connected to the place. That's all. Come regularly to the assembly of devotees and ask questions and get enlightened, clarify, get your doubts clarified. In this way, you can be happy in this world and the next world. Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita. You can be happy both now also and later also. And it can be seen practically in one's life. You see for yourself. Many of you are young. You must have come a few months ago. But you continue practicing, chanting Hare Krishna and coming in the assembly of devotees. See, after a year, how your heart is transforming. Actually, giving up greed means having a transformation of heart. You are not going to alter the external situation. The world is going to be as it is. You cannot change that. But you have to reform inside. And that inside reformation takes place. Shinvatam Sakata Krishna Punyashavana Ketana Hridyantastogi Abhadrani Vidunoti Sugatsatam. The transformation takes place when you simply hear this Krishna Katha regularly. Then the heart will transform. Because if I have a greed to eat all the food in all the hotels of Pune, is it possible? Is it possible? I want to eat all the varieties of food. Some people do that. I heard that some people go to one party and they eat a lot of food there, and then they eat some medicinal pills to vomit it out. And they go to the next party. And there also they eat to their full stomach. And again they vomit. They go to the third party. Because the tongue is so long. Long means they want to taste. They want to taste different types of foodstuffs. What a crazy idea it is. They may spoil their liver and the stomach very soon, within a few years. So if I am very greedy to eat all the foods in all the hotels, that is not possible. So can I tell all 5-star hotels you shut down now today? Can I tell them? Because I am very greedy to eat, so don't cook, otherwise I'll be very greedy to eat them. Can I tell them? It is not possible. But I have to reform my inside mentality. Because I have to understand that it is not possible for me to enjoy everything in every hotel. So I have to reform that mentality. In the same way, the whole world is going to be caught up in the rat race for material enjoyment and accumulating wealth. But you cannot say that I am also greedy. I want to enjoy more and more. The more you are greedy, the more you will suffer. But you reform your mentality. Give up that greedy mentality. And when the greedy mentality is given up, then one will see that the heart becomes satisfied as it is said in the Sutta Shloka. So, in the very first verse of Ishopanishad, it is said, Tena tak tena bhunjita magradattasya siddhana. Isha vastam idam sarvam. Everything in this world belongs. And nothing more, not even a speck more. So if everyone is taking only whatever is required for sustenance, do you think the world will suffer? Definitely not. People are actually taking their quota and taking 100 other people's quota. That is why the whole world is suffering. Because people are encroaching upon others' property. This is the reason for all suffering. I heard in America what they do, they don't allow people to put pesticides and insecticides in their fields, because they know that it will attack their people. You know that? You heard it. But they manufacture a lot of insecticides and pesticides and they sell it for foreign countries. You know, they sell it to other countries. So they think, let other people go to hell. But we will eat very nice grains where there are no insecticides and pesticides put, because it is very bad for the health, because it reduces your life and it causes so many, it leads to so many toxic waste in your body which cause diseases in the future. So they want to eat pure food, but for outside people, they want to send this insecticide and pesticides. But when they try to do that, do you know what happens? Later on, they needed so much grains, but now they started importing grains from the other countries into their country. But they have not yet realized the mistake that those grains are grown using the same insecticides and pesticides which they have sold to them. And now they are eating the same. You understand? Everyone understood what I said? So this is the nature of man. Man thinks, man is so selfish that I have to be happy. Let my neighbor go to hell. As long as this mentality is there, no one can be happy. So the Ishopanishad teaches in the very first shloka, tena tat tena bhunjita, take whatever is meant for you, only. Matrudakkasya siddhanam, don't try to encroach upon other's property, knowing well to whom they all belong to. To whom does it belong to? It belongs to God. He is the ultimate owner, controller, proprietor of everything that exists. So, unfortunately, this knowledge is lacking even in the most educated men of today. You are all very fortunate to be connected to ISKCON this forum, that you are getting enlightenment in spiritual life along with your knowledge of your engineering field. Isn't it? See, you have the best education in the material field, engineering, medicine and things like that. At the same time, you have the best education in the spiritual field, where you have a very scientific understanding of what is God consciousness and how to live our way of life. So you are getting best in both, but if you miss this opportunity to become a devotee, then there is nobody who can be more unfortunate than you. So I request all of you that the semester is very soon coming to an end. So don't give up your chanting of Hare Krishna just because the exams are approaching. In fact, you have to chant all the more when exams are coming, because when you chant, you gain more confidence in everything you do. When you don't chant, naturally you become weak-hearted. So if you chant regularly, read Srila Prabhupada's books, which are full of wisdom, come to temple regularly, at least once in a week, say the darshan of the Lord, associate with devotees, make your life a complete success. We have such intelligence with which you are studying one of the most difficult fields, engineering and medicine. But use the same intelligence to understand God. That is the best use of intelligence. Try to read the spiritual books given by Srila Prabhupada and offer your intelligence as a sacrifice to God and understand the subject matter. And experience a change of heart and change of way of life by which you can be a productive element for your home, for society, for nation, and for the benefit of every living being. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.